43-year-old, two-time Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist Anthony Shadid, father of two, died yesterday in Syria. His many friends are reeling. He'd survived so much. But Anthony and photographer Tyler Hicks reportedly pulled apart a wire fence, met guides on the other side who had horses who took them deep into Syria, where he had an asthmatic reaction to the horses. He stopped breathing. Tyler could not resuscitate him and carried Anthony Shadid's body out to Turkey. We have reached New York Times reporter Stephen Farrell. He joins us from the BBC Bureau in Jerusalem. Stephen, so sorry for your loss.
Yeah. I can't imagine what his family are going through.
No. Well, what's of course just gets us all is that you, you, Tyler, Anthony, and the photographer Lindsay Addario had been kidnapped together by Muammar Gaddafi's forces in Libya last March. In reading back over the New York Times accounts of that time, we remember an incredible moment, a moment of such generosity where you were all bound and Tyler managed to pull some cigarettes out of Anthony's pocket and light them and give them to Anthony. I'm just wondering first your thoughts on these two particular men, you know, being in this situation in Syria, given that they'd been together in such incredible situations before.
Libya was about as close as you can come to getting killed. I mean, we spent many, many hours lying on the ground with bullets and rocket propelled grenades coming in just over our heads and bouncing off the tarmac road around us. And, I mean, Tyler is just the guy you would want with you in a situation like this. I mean, he is completely level-headed. Nothing phases him. And Anthony just knows the street, knows Libya, Syria, Lebanon, Iraq inside out. So they're both extremely brave. They both push journalism as far as it can be pushed. And, you know, I just can't imagine what Tyler is going through at the moment, having tried to, first of all, having had such a narrow escape almost a year ago, exactly, and now having tried to save Anthony and not having managed to do so because it sounds like it was an impossible task.
Yeah. What, you know, we'll be hearing so much about Anthony Shadid's writing, and I want to ask you about that too, but what did you learn about him that only someone could learn having been in that situation, all four of you together, and that heart-stopping time where you would move from place to place, beaten, as you said, feared you were going to be killed, taunted. What did you learn about him?
First of all, we were all very lucky in that situation that there were four of us. People had different strengths. When somebody was down, others would be up. I mean, Anthony is a very, very quick thinker and very good at empathizing with people. Right at the beginning, actually, I didn't pay any heed to it then, but I remember the very first moment of our capture, as we were being laid on the ground and guys were pointing guns at our head. I speak a bit of Arabic, but obviously he's fluent, so
right.
I instinctively looked to him, and he was gasping. His mouth was opening and closing, and he just, no words were coming out of his mouth. And at the time, I put it down to panic. We were all terrified. So I just started engaging with them myself. I mean, I'll never know, but in hindsight, you just wonder. Stress, asthma. I'm not a doctor. I wouldn't make a diagnosis on the spot, but I knew he had an inhaler. I had seen him work with an inhaler, and you just realize that everything he did, I mean, the risks he took, the way he could empathize with people, the being right in the middle of crowds, we all do that. We all take risks, but knowing that you have a condition where, like asthma, clearly severe, must have put an extra layer of difficulty on what he did, and what he did better than anyone.
Well, yeah, of course. Now we think that he put himself in those situations knowing that he had asthma and knowing what the consequences could be. And we spoke to him recently when he was on his book tour here and spoke at a bookstore here in the area. And it was right after you were released. And, you know, he kind of indicated that maybe with two children and, you know, maybe having escaped so many times, you know, shot in 2002 in the West Bank, that maybe he would back off a little bit from those far more perilous situations. But are you surprised that he didn't? I mean, there he is going through a barbed wire fence in Syria.
These are personal decisions for everybody. I talked about this with Anthony. He was back and forth on it, but we ran a piece on the New York Times' At War blog a couple of years ago. It was an excerpt from Anthony's first book, and I reread it again this morning. It was very, very interesting. He was talking about his decision to stay in Baghdad in 2003 when the bombs were falling, when the American forces were moving toward Baghdad, and he said he made a promise to himself that he'd stay because he didn't want to be part of a sanitized reporting campaign. He wanted to be where the bombs and the bullets were falling to show the human consequences of policy decisions. And he was very clear about that. And I think when that is steeped through you to your bone marrow, I think it's a very difficult decision for a man, you know, who is Arab-American, who has fluent Arabic, who knows the region better than anyone, to say, I'm going to walk away. In the middle of the most transformative event in the Arab world for generations, to just say, everything I've worked for, everything I have built up, my body of knowledge, my ability to translate, you know, literally and in journalistic terms, events and make them understandable to people, you know, no more. I'm just going to walk away. I'm going to give it up. That has to be a very, very difficult decision for somebody to take.
Yeah. And by the way, we should mention, we've mentioned that he was fluent in Arabic. He grew up in Oklahoma City. You know, he taught himself Arabic because he wanted to be able to get to that deeper layer of interaction with people. And when I would read the Times, I would start reading first, and then I'd get a feeling about an article, and my eyes would sweep up, and I'd see the byline. And I always knew when something was Anthony's because I'd be suddenly hearing something or hearing some layer or getting some detail. Can you speak to his writing?
First of all, he had courage, fortitude to go to the hard places when you had to go there. On top of that, when he got there, he had the language and the cultural knowledge and the ability to empathize with people, to get down what people were thinking and feeling and what was really happening. When you do speak some Arabic, when you read some Arabic, different layers come in. You can see the graffiti on the wall. You can hear what people are saying in the crowd, and it gives you nuances that you miss if you don't have that language. But then none of that is any good unless you can take it and filter it through into the writing. And he didn't just filter it through, he magnified it. I mean, his writing was so magnificent that, and I saw him do it. I'd be with him in the middle of Iraq, or actually in Libya. I remember we were in Ajdabiya just before we were captured. We'd be talking it through, and he'd be saying, well, I think what's relevant here is this is a counterpoint to what's happening in Bahrain, and then you've got to remember Tunisia and what's happening in Yemen. He was getting the detail of the microcosm, but he was instantaneously putting it into the context of the macrocosm and trying to communicate both of that through to the readers. It was a unique talent.
New York Times foreign correspondent Stephen Farrell, who's helping us remember Anthony Shadid, who died yesterday in Syria after apparently suffering an asthma attack. And Stephen, today the Times printed a paragraph from Anthony's book that's going to be published next month, House of Stone. Now remember, he's Lebanese-American, and he writes about being in Lebanon after an Israeli air assault in 2006, going into a town that had been struck and is frozen in a moment. I just want to read what he saw. The victims were caught in the midst of a morning's work. We saw the dead standing, sitting, looking around. The village, its voices and stories, plates and bowls, letters and words, its history, had been obliterated in a few extended moments that splintered a quiet morning. I mean, can you think of other moments like that, or just, you know, comment on that in any way?
When we were in Ajdabiya in Libya a year ago, it was a horrifyingly terrifying front line. I mean, bombs were coming in, rockets, missiles, Gaddafi's forces were moving closer and closer. And I think most journalists would have been reflecting and writing a war scene. But as we're driving around in the car, what Anthony is doing is, you know, we're looking at the guys owning chicken restaurants, loading the chickens up onto the spit, and you're realizing they're going to cook for the civilians in Ajdabiya if they remain civilians. They're going to cook for the Gaddafi forces if they come in. He's listening to the town mosques, the messages that are blaring out, and he's calibrating whether they're ones of defiance or ones of people urging people to piety and so on and so forth. There really was a sense of deep cultural, religious, political context that he was putting the events of a war into.
Because he could hear them and see them and understand them.
Yes.
It, as we said, it was An asthma attack, you know, of all things. By the way, as a foreign correspondent yourself, I mean, do you take the time to think about, can you even go there? You know, how weird is that, of all the things you've all been through, that would be the thing?
I'm really having problems processing that. I mean, we all are. I'm just getting email after email from my colleagues, Anthony's colleagues. I have a friend on the BBC, Alan Johnson, who was captured in Gaza some years ago, and he said, you know, he said, you stay long enough on the casino floor, the house always wins, you know, and you think that's going to be a bullet or in the wrong place at the wrong time, and it just turns out to be something you couldn't possibly predict it.
But it also points to that, you know, when you take these risks, it could be an asthma attack, it could be anything, because it's not like when you're in a war zone, it's not like you're going to call 911. I mean, had he had the same attack somewhere else, it might, you know, so it still goes to the fact that, you know, you're a war correspondent, or a foreign correspondent, you're taking these risks.
I think Anthony would have certainly described himself as a foreign correspondent rather than a war correspondent.
Right.
I mean, he was somebody trying to explain the political and social and cultural and sometimes military events that are happening on their patch, on their watch. And sometimes that involves war. A year, 2 years ago, I remember he, you know, if he didn't think that a politician or a diplomat was pulling his weight or had done a stellar job, he would say it and he would write it, and he'd write it hard. You know, he searched for truth and analysis right across the spectrum of what we do, as I say, society, culture, politics, religion, and sometimes war.
We have lost far too many foreign correspondents in the last couple of years. I think there's been sort of a record number. Others have, after having had brutal experiences, David Rode comes to mind, we've spoken to him on this program, who was also kidnapped, have just decided, you know, been shaken and decided they can't go forward. Does this rattle you and your fellow correspondents? Does it make you rethink what you do? Does it make you want to go back and do it more? What?
I think we all of us rethink what we do on a almost daily, certainly weekly, monthly basis. I think the particular circumstances of this are just so out of the blue, just so unusual, that everybody is still stunned, and it's far too early to start drawing consequences or lessons.
How would you characterize it? You know, we bow to all of you who do this work, but how would you characterize this loss in this world?
I think you would struggle to find anybody who would argue with the proposition that Anthony was the preeminent foreign correspondent of his generation, certainly in the Middle East. I mean, two Pulitzers speak to that. He's part of the team that's been nominated for one this year as well. He is just going to be irreplaceable, and there's just no two ways about it.
Stephen Farrell, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Well, Anthony Shadid was also a friend of Here and Now, on the phone from some war zone, in the studio, or in September of last year at the Porter Square bookstore in Cambridge, Massachusetts. It had been just a few months after he, Farrell, and two other journalists were detained in Libya. Anthony had been at work on a book about renovating the family home in southern Lebanon. I asked him about going back to war zones. Is there a point where you say, is there a point where you don't go out?
Well, you know, I mean, part of the reason I went back to southern Lebanon to write the book was, you know, I mean, in the past 10 years, I'd been shot in the back. I'd covered three wars, really. This is before the Libya experience, and I had it, to be honest. You know, I do think there are stories that are worth taking risks for. I'm not sure that the Libya story was, and I especially that, you know, the fate of our driver is unknown, and I think we're all very haunted by that we're responsible. You know, if he did not make it, that we're responsible for his death. I do think other stories, though, are worth risks. And I think, you know, I had to go into Syria recently, and I felt like that was something that needed to be done. You know, maybe it's a little bit vain, and I'm not sure if it is or not, but you do worry as a journalist that some stories aren't going to be told unless you do them. And it, you do kind of carry a little bit of a burden with that. But I have to say, I'm kind of contradicting myself here, but on the other hand, I think this is a young person's job more than I get a little tired of it. I was in Libya when the sniper fire and the endless gunfire in the air is all celebratory, but it was unnerving. You know, I said I would much rather be in Cambridge right now than than in Tripoli. So,
I just want to thank you so much for all your work and just say stay safe as you continue. Thank you. Anthony Shadid died yesterday in Syria. He was 43.